It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Shelley Buffalo is a member of the Meskwaki tribe. She does not live on the settlement near Tama. She lives and works in Iowa City, and she recently founded a new organization called the Jingle Dress Society, a group designed to give Native people in Iowa a voice and a way to share and celebrate their culture. And Shelley Buffalo is here with me now. Hello, Shelley.
Why, hello, Charity. Thank you so much for inviting me here.
Thank you so much for being here. And I know that you spent a lot of your time as you were growing up in Tama County near the Meskwaki settlement. Later, you lived on the settlement. And then you went to college at Iowa State University. You moved away. And I'm curious about that transition that you made from being on or near the settlement and being a part of the Meskwaki tribe to going to Iowa State University, where your experience was really unique among the other students. What was that like for you?
Well, it was a culture shock, but it was it's always been kind of a catch-22 for me, because I didn't fully understand why it was a culture shock, or even that I was undergoing a culture shock, because I've always struggled to learn my own culture. My mother is non-Indian, and my father was beaten in boarding school for speaking the Meskwaki language, so the way I was raised was to master the English language and to be assimilated in white culture, even though we always lived either in proximity to the Meskwaki settlement, or when my mom remarried to a Meskwaki, we actually lived on the Meskwaki settlement for the rest of my childhood. But as you can see, I'm not a white person in society. You know, I'm always going to be identified as either Indian or at least a brown person. So, you grow up within this culture and kind of a way of thinking and understanding things. Yet, I guess at Iowa State, you know, what I encountered was all of a sudden, even though I never thought of myself as a representative or an expert, and I'm still not an expert in the Meskwaki culture, I was expected to be. And I faced, you know, head on so many stereotypes, it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming to sort through them.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, as someone who grew up assimilating, was there a point at which you kind of embraced your cultural heritage, or was that something you pushed back against?
I always embraced it. I think what before I got to Iowa State, one thing that I embraced was punk rock. And that allowed me actually to rebel against everything, absolutely everything. But I never rebelled against my culture. You know, I guess I rebelled against that dominant society that was describing me as something I wasn't.
So now, as a businesswoman, as an Iowan, living away from the Meskwaki settlement, as a mother,
yeah,
how do you think about the Meskwaki culture and what it means to you today?
Well, it's so important to me. And it's really difficult to, like, I love living in the Iowa City community, and both my boys have been in school here, and I plan to stay here at least until, you know, they finish high school. It's going to be a few years for my youngest. And so I'm committed to this community, but yet I'm always connected to the Meskwaki community, always. And there's an understanding that within our tribe is that so everything you do impacts your community because all of you are connected. And so I keep that in mind in the way that I live. Even like, you know, I try to remind myself to, you know, try to think like a Meskwaki. And when I do go home to visit, I'm always asking questions and I'm always learning. It's a continuous learning process. But it's difficult because, once again, I'm here and I'm not there being more immersed.
You talked about how it was difficult to be put in the position of being a representative of your culture. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's kind of what I'm asking you to do today.
Yeah.
And you carry the last name Buffalo, which is part of a well-known, high-profile family within the Meskwaki community. So mm-hmm. how do you feel about that today? The fact that when you tell someone that your name is Shelley Buffalo, the next thing out of their mouth, if they know anything about the Meskwaki, is, oh, are you related to Jonathan Buffalo?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that now? Because it's something you carry with you everywhere.
Well, it's great to be Jonathan's cousin. And he is always a great resource, you know, and I wish I could get back there more often. Unfortunately, work and school take up a lot of my time, and weekends, even soccer, you know, with the kids, because I have conversations in my mind.
And I should mention that Jonathan Buffalo is the tribal historian for the Meskwaki, so somebody that people hear from a lot.
Yeah. Conversations in my mind, you know, with Jonathan, of so many things that I want to ask him as I read, as I discover, as I learn and make connections, especially on a historical level. It's amazing, you know, going all the way from the tribal origins on the East Coast, and even how American Indian has influenced American society, culture, and the government in such dramatic ways, and ways that people aren't aware of.
You decided to found this Jingle Dress Society, and I think before we kind of get into why you decided to do that, can you tell us just a little bit about the story of the Jingle Dress? Why this name? Where does that come from?
Yeah, I've always held the Jingle Dress dance in reverence. And just a little side note, I have not yet danced the Jingle Dress dance. I will. But the origin story is that it's a healing dance. And it came out of the Ojibwe culture, Northern Great Lakes region, in the early 20th century. The story varies from tribe to tribe, but a medicine man or father or grandfather had a dream, and this dress and the dance came to him. And it was to heal a young girl, granddaughter or daughter. He followed the instructions in the dream, and it did heal her as they had her put on the dress and do the dance. So it represents this healing dance. And interesting, in a historical context, they think the dance came about in 1918, 1919. And this was during a period of time that the United States policies were enacted to outlaw American Indian religion and culture. The period of time between 1870 to 1934 can be considered the dark ages for American Indian religious freedom. So sometime around 1919, the Jingle Dress dance started and spread. Direct or indirect, it is a response to oppression and is a womanly act of love for her community and culture.
A little like punk rock.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, it's so fascinating that it came about during this time when so much of Native culture had already been oppressed and lost. This was new, but mm-hmm. became something very important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it did lose popularity or kind of disappear almost for a while.
Yeah.
And then it got to be a lot more common with the rise of sort of powwow culture.
Yeah. And probably with the rise of the American Indian movement and definitely powwow culture. And so now the modern Jingle Dress dance is a lot more stylized, and there's a lot of variations. There's still the traditional Jingle Dress dancers, and their dance is more of, once again, ceremonial, the act of healing. But the powwow dancers, it's just incredible to watch them. Their footwork, I mean, I have practiced their footwork, and some of it I cannot figure out. It is amazing. The dresses, the amount of tin, it's the shells that are sewn to the dresses are actually traditionally made from snuff can tin caps mm-hmm. rolled into cones. And some of these dresses weigh an amazing amount.
Wow. So you're not just dancing, but carrying all that weight.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And they wear these heavy belts, you know, to hold up the dresses. So they're truly athletes, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So what does this mean to you right now? Why start the Jingle Dress Society in 2017 or 2016?
Well, first off, to promote mutual respect and understanding. I had the idea to form an organization, you know, a couple years back. I ran into a young woman here in Coralville at the Hy-Vee, and she had on a jacket from a powwow contest. And so we started talking about the Jingle Dress Dance. And kind of that started my thinking about it's so hard to live away from your community when you're Native American. So how is it that I can promote the culture in a way that's accurate and respectful? And so that idea just started. And then last fall, I traveled to Sioux City to help my friends Ron and Gia, who have the Sioux City Music Conservatory. And I helped them with their annual fundraiser. And it was such a learning experience. And it was really inspirational how much they do for their community through music. Then in December, I traveled to Standing Rock, and I spent 4 days camping at the Ocheti Shakwin camp. And
that's where the Dakota Access Pipeline protests were focused. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was that camp was on the what they call the front lines of that protest. And so it took, you know, it took a lot of bravery just to go there. But on Saturday night, I attended a round dance at the Dome, which is this geodesic structure that was erected there. And the demographic was interesting because it was about 20% Indian and 80% non-Native or other. Mm-hmm. And what was, first off, I was struck by, I was like, wow, we really need to teach these people how to round dance. This isn't Coachella. But then as I danced and I watched and I took everything in, I got a sense of like how much camaraderie and really joy was emanating from that dome. And I realized that basically this is, you know, there was a lot of good medicine going on. And it was something that, you know, I saw as an avenue for building bridges, is community building. And round dance is inclusive. So nobody's a spectator. Everybody's encouraged to take part, whether you're Indian or not. And I think that's important when you're trying to promote cultural outreach, is that instead of just watching this, you know, you actually take part and, you know, you become a part of that community for that duration.
Now, I think I'm just going to speak from my perspective as someone who has a great deal of respect for Native culture, but also knows that's not part of my heritage. You know, my great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents all came from Europe. There's this fear of being too interested, getting too close because of cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
You know, that there's that timidity. How do you balance that? Because obviously, you know, this is part of your heritage. It's not part of mine. Mm-hmm. How can you share respectfully? How can people participate respectfully?
Well, round dance is one of those ways. And that's where the inspiration came from, is because round dance, like powwow, is a pan-Indian activity. There's a lot of different reasons that people hold round dances. Some of it's ceremonial, some of it's a memorial, but many times it's just fun and it's just a celebration of community. And this is where I know at our annual Meskwaki powwow each August, we always have the friendship dance, which is the round dance. And that's when everybody, all the spectators are invited to come and join in and dance. And so by nature, you know, this dance is pretty much designed to to make people, to invite people in, to make people comfortable, to ask people to take part. And so that's the opposite of cultural appropriation, when you're invited. And like I said, it's an opportunity to start a conversation, to start friendships.
And I know you had a round dance scheduled. You had to delay it because of a loss within the Meskwaki community. And I'm so sorry about that. And you're looking for a new date now. But I want to ask you, in addition to reaching out, I feel like you founded this society to meet a need that you weren't having met as an Indigenous person in the United States today.
Yeah.
What do you think this can give you and other people like you?
Well, it's first off, with cultural outreach, we're giving, once again, we're giving a chance for people to start a conversation. So I've always been interested in other people's cultures and backgrounds. I always ask people what their background is. So I listen about their beliefs and I seek to better understand them, in part so that I may find commonalities, ways to relate to one another. And as the general public learns and finds commonalities with their Indian neighbors, then that's kind of the medicine against stereotypes and cultural misunderstanding. Stereotypes do damage. Misunderstandings do too. And so I believe it kind of, not only does it, I guess, build bridges and make us, you know, better communities in general, but specifically for Indian people, it empowers us. Ultimately, you know, unfortunately, the narrative has been controlled by what we call the colonizers. And the narrative, because of that, is inaccurate. And so
it's a way to take back that narrative, at least in a small way.
Yes, empower people to take back the narrative. Yes.
Shelley Buffalo, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
Shelley Buffalo is the founder of the Jingle Dress Society, and you can find out a great deal more about the Jingle Dress Society on Facebook. Just search for Jingle Dress Society, and there's a lot of information available. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. The show is produced by Ben Stanton, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. I'm Charity Nebbie.